The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So for the next few weeks, I don't know how many weeks yet, I thought I would talk about the Eightfold Path. It might end up being 8 weeks, but I don't know. It might be more or less than that. So many of us come to a spiritual path through some kind of an encounter with suffering, where we feel like things just aren't working out. I'm doing everything to the best of my ability, and it just feels like things are drastically wrong in my life. That's how I felt. And I know that many people come to spiritual practice because of a deep meeting with suffering. The Buddha said that when we meet suffering in this way, it leads to either confusion or a search. And this search being a kind of a looking for some teaching or some path that can help us to navigate the struggles, the difficulties of our lives. In the teachings of the Buddha, this path, this spiritual path, is the Noble Eightfold Path. As the name implies, there are eight components to it, and I'll just name them right now. There's right view or wise view, right thought or right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So that's the standard order in which the Noble Eightfold Path is described, beginning with right view and right understanding and right intention or thought, and then moving on to right speech, right action, right livelihood, and then culminating in right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. So in this traditional ordering, the factor of right view or right understanding begins the path. That's where we start. And that's actually the topic that I will talk about this evening, is right view, right understanding. And there is also, before I go get to right understanding, I'd like to just also mention there's an alternative view of the path, that, or an alternative description of the path that I believe Tony Bernhard talked about a few weeks ago, the gradual training, the gradual teaching, which begins with a training in ethics, that we get our ethical conduct in place, and from that base of ethical conduct, our mind can relax into the cultivation of concentration. And from that concentration comes wisdom. So the another ordering of this path is seen in a threefold training of ethics, concentration, and wisdom. The factors of the Eightfold Path fit into these three trainings. The ethical component is comprised of right speech, right action, right livelihood. The concentration component is comprised of right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And the wisdom aspect is comprised of right understanding and right view, right thought, or right intention. So in this order, right understanding and right thought end the path as opposed to begin the path. So this may seem like a little bit of a contradiction, but it really just points to the fact that there's a kind of a circular nature or maybe a spiral-like nature to this Eightfold Path. Well, actually, it's a really interwoven kind of nature, but that we really need to start with some level of understanding about what the path is aiming towards and how the path aims to get there before we even get on the path. There needs to be some basic level of understanding about what the path is before we start walking on it. So that's why in the traditional ordering, right understanding begins the path. And the understanding that is cultivated deepens and clarifies as we engage in the practice, as we meet our experience through walking this path, the understanding gets more and more clear to the point where it's an experiential understanding rather than a conceptual understanding. So in a way, we begin our path with a conceptual understanding of the path. We begin our understanding with a conceptual understanding of what right view is, of what the path is. And we end when we fully understand through experience the meaning of wise view, right understanding. And I'll talk a little bit more about that aspect of the Eightfold Path later. So today I'll talk about right view, and we'll follow up in the coming weeks with each of the successive factors of the Eightfold Path. Next week, right intention or right thought. So, right view. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about what view is and why it's important. View is basically a kind of a term for how we see the world, how we understand the world. And our worldview operates based on what we believe, our opinions, and we filter things through this worldview so that we have... It can act almost in the background without our really being clear that we're acting through a view. It can be almost subconscious that we've got this view that we're acting with. And it's like whatever we see in the world is interpreted through that view. So the worldview that we usually operate with is given to us by our families, by our culture, by advertising, by our friends, by our conditioning, our life experiences. All of these things contribute together to create our worldview. And this is not a trivial thing. Bhikkhu Bodhi, who is a great translator of the Pali Canon into English, says this about our worldview. Our perspectives on the crucial issues of reality and value have a bearing that goes beyond mere theoretical convictions. They govern our attitudes, our actions, our whole orientation to existence. And he goes on to say that whether or not they are clearly formulated in our minds, they structure our perceptions, order our values, crystallize into the ideational framework through which we interpret to ourselves the meaning of the world. These views then condition action. They lie behind our choices and goals and our effort to turn these goals from ideals into actuality. So our views really guide us through our lives, whether or not we are really aware of what those views are. So, for example, some of the views that our culture holds, and actually, you know, most cultures hold this, sense pleasure will make you happy. Our culture in particular moves towards possessions will make you happy. Consuming things will make you happy. There's an ad that really highlights this. It's an ad for Ford truck. And there's a Ford truck, a beautiful new Ford truck, and a guy sitting next to it. And there's a whole bunch of outdoor equipment piled up around it, all the latest and greatest outdoor gear. And he's sitting in a meditation posture in this picture. And here is the copy on the ad. Spence put a new twist on an old philosophy. To be one with everything, you've got to have one of everything. That's why he also has the new Ford Ranger, so he can seek wisdom on a mountaintop, take off in hot pursuit of enlightenment, and connect with Mother Earth by looking no further than the planet's coolest four-door compact pickup. He says it gives him easy access to inner peace, which makes him one happy soul. This is the message we get from our culture. The view described by the Buddha in the Eightfold Path, right view, provides a very different framework through which to understand our experience. In this right view, he offers us a way to live skillfully and wisely towards this goal of freedom from suffering. This is the whole directionality of the path. In sitting down and coming to his awakening under the Bodhi tree, this was the problem he was trying to solve, the problem of the suffering in the human condition. So the path that he uncovered or discovered in a way is a path that leads to the ending of suffering. So the view that he frames to get us there orients us towards this goal. So in this aspect of right view, there are two forms of right view. There's what might be called worldly right view and transcendent right view. And I'll talk about both of those. That sounds kind of lofty or something, but I'll try to make it seem pretty down to earth here. So worldly right view is basically a type of understanding that that makes us happier in the world, that brings more and more peace and happiness in our worldly existence. And these include an understanding of what is skillful and unskillful with respect to the increasing of happiness and the reduction of suffering. Not only for ourselves, but for others as well. So this is a key piece of this aspect of right view, that our actions in terms of moving us towards happiness and away from suffering are, we are engaging in the world in a way such that we are not causing harm to ourselves or to others. So this aspect of right view from the outset brings in how our actions impact others. So it's not a selfish path of just looking solely at ourselves. It looks at our interactions in the world and how we impact the world. So the first aspect here is this understanding of what is helpful for us, what is leading us away from suffering, what is leading us towards happiness. So the typical word used here is what is skillful or wholesome with respect to moving in this direction, and what is unskillful or unwholesome in towards of moving in this direction. So this is the area or the realm of ethical conduct. Actions, the understanding around what is skillful is that actions motivated out of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion move us towards happiness. Actions motivated out of greed, aversion, or delusion will move us towards suffering. A very simple framework for which to view our actions. And related to this understanding of what is skillful and unskillful is an understanding of the law of karma. I'm not going to go into great detail in the law of karma. This is a big topic. I'll just try to give you broad brush strokes about what the basic idea or the basic understanding of karma is. Basically, karma is a law of cause and effect. It's a natural law, according to the Buddha. It's the law that, like a natural law, that when you plant an apple seed, an apple tree will grow. Or when you plant an apple seed, an apple tree can grow, perhaps, depending on the conditions in which that seed is placed. But if you plant an apple seed, you will not get an apricot tree. A very natural law that out of that seed springs a particular kind of tree. So the understanding of karma is that it's a very natural law, a natural unfolding, that when we make choices based out of greed, aversion, and delusion, we will suffer at some point in our existence. When you make choices out of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, that tends to lead us away from suffering towards happiness at some point. Again, it's not an immediate kind of thing. It's got to do with all the conditions, just like it's exactly like the notion of a seed being planted. If a seed is planted into dry soil, for a while it's not going to sprout. But when it gets rain, when it gets moisture, when it gets nourishment from the soil, then it can sprout. So these seeds that we plant of our intentions will sprout when the conditions are right for that to ripen. So the understanding of karma is basically an understanding of the ethical consequences of our actions. And again, this is not a it's not like there's some some, you know, divine intervention here to create justice. In the understanding is basically that it's just a natural law. It's the natural case that greed, aversion, and delusion leads to suffering. So this understanding of karma, as I mentioned earlier about this being a worldly right view, it has the capacity to make us happier in the world. But in the understanding of karma, the understanding of the cause and effect nature of our actions, and that acting out of greed, aversion, and delusion leads us to suffering, acting out of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion leads us towards happiness. Inherently, there's nothing in that understanding that would lead us to the transcending of all suffering. We might still have a subtle kind of holding to skillful intention in order to create more and more worldly happiness in our lives. So this understanding of karma is very important, and yet it's not quite enough in the Buddha's understanding to completely free us from all forms of suffering. To fully transcend clinging, we need a deeper perspective. And this is the transcendent right view, the view that can allow us to fully transcend all forms of suffering. And the main definition of this view is an understanding of the Four Noble Truths. So the Four Noble Truths, I know most of you know them, but they are the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of cessation of suffering, and the truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. So the truth of suffering is basically a recognition or an understanding that suffering exists in our lives. And this suffering that the Buddha is talking about is a very broad ranging. It's usually the term that it's translating, that suffering is translating, is the term dukkha, the Pali term dukkha. And the definition of dukkha is actually much broader than what we normally think of when we think of the word suffering. Suffering usually conjures up for us deep despair, massive suffering, whereas the understanding of dukkha is much more subtle. It consists of the subtlest kinds of unease, the sense of something's not right, or things should be different, or this thing shouldn't go away. Why is this thing going away? All of those are dukkha. People have used different translations for the term. Tanjeff uses stress, which conveys some of the subtlety of dukkha. Others use dis-ease or unease, uneasiness. Again, conveying some of the subtlety of dukkha. So there is this dukkha in our lives. We all have this dukkha in our lives. It's kind of inherent in the fabric of being human. In the Second Noble Truth, the Buddha says that the cause of dukkha is craving. It's this wanting things to be other than they are. And if you explore in your own experience, actually, if you look in your own experience, when we feel things are not right, when we feel like we are suffering, there is usually some component And the Buddha would say there is always a component of wanting it to be another way. That we can't accept things as they are. And it's that non-acceptance of things as they are that creates this kind of rub in the mind, this mismatch, this feeling of dukkha, this feeling that things are not right. It's the wanting things to be otherwise that creates that feeling. It's not the fact that things are as they are that creates the feeling. It's the non-acceptance that things are as they are that creates that feeling of dissatisfaction, suffering, unease, distress. The third noble truth is that it's possible to end this dukkha through completely letting go of wanting things to be other than they are. That's a big challenge. This is not a simple task. But the Buddha says it's possible. And the way to do that is through this Eightfold Path. The fourth noble truth comes back to this Eightfold Path. So we have another cycle here in the teaching, that the first factor of the Eightfold Path, right view, contains the understanding of the Four Noble Truths. And the last aspect of the Four Noble Truths, the path, is the Eightfold Path. So we come back into a cycle here. So this cycle, again, is pointing to this fact that there's different levels or different ways of understanding this right view. So as I mentioned before, there's this kind of notion of kind of a cognitive understanding or conceptual understanding at first. And so the conceptual understanding at first around the Four Noble Truths is basically taking in the teaching, hearing about it, learning about it, reflecting on it. We have to begin that way. And these aspects of hearing about something and reflecting on it are aspects of wisdom. The wisdom faculty is said to have three aspects. The first aspect is the hearing of truth, the hearing of wisdom. The second aspect being the reflecting on, the thinking about wisdom. And the third aspect being the actual cultivation given that we've understood something and reflected on it. So we take in the teaching of the Four Noble Truths, we reflect on it, we think about it, think about whether it makes sense to us. And if it makes enough sense to us, we may start engaging in the activity of walking the path. These truths, the Four Noble Truths, are not something that's just meant to be understood conceptually. They're actually meant to be put into practice. So the suttas tell us that there are several conditions that support the arising of right view. And these are hearing the truth, which is what I've just been mentioning, that we take in the teachings of the Four Noble Truths. So hearing the truth. And the second aspect or second condition that supports wise understanding or right view is wise attention. So the hearing the truth is actually hearing the teachings that it is possible to move beyond suffering. Wise attention is an interesting one. Wise attention is defined as wisely attending to our experience through the framework of the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha says that a person who attends wisely to experience attends, this is suffering, this is the cause of suffering, this is the cessation of suffering, this is the path leading to the cessation of suffering. Actually using this view of the Four Noble Truths as a way to understand our experience. So this gives us a little bit of a clue as to how we move from the conceptual understanding of the Four Noble Truths to the deeper, more experiential understanding. Actually using this framework of the Four Noble Truths to understand our present moment experience. In this teaching, where the Buddha says, a wise person reflects, this is suffering, this is the cause of suffering. That's about looking at what's happening here and now, looking into the present moment and understanding what's happening through this framework, through these four facets, essentially, of the Four Noble Truths. We can actually look at or understand all things that happen to us as being either suffering, the cause of suffering, the ending of suffering, or qualities supporting the cultivation of the path. So as we're in meditation, engaging in our mindfulness practice, we meet our experience moment to moment. And moment to moment, we can see our experience as noticing, oh, this is dukkha. This aversion that I'm experiencing, this anger, this feeling of frustration or irritation, this is dukkha, this is suffering. Or we might notice the wanting that lies underneath, the wanting things to be different, that feeling, that pull. We want things to be different, that being the cause of suffering. Or we might, through noticing our experience, being mindful, just simply observing experience, in a moment we might see a pattern drop away. We might see anger disappear as we bring our attention to it and notice the ending of that pattern of suffering and recognize that's the ending of suffering. Or we might, as we're attending to our experience, recognize that we're cultivating patience and equanimity and mindfulness and concentration and faith and energy, all these beautiful qualities that support the heart to open to these truths. So the Buddha is pointing us into the present moment with this teaching. So the completion of right view, or the complete development of right view, means somebody completely understands the Four Noble Truths experientially, not as an idea, but understands it directly in their experience. Fully understands how craving causes suffering, and in that full understanding sees that craving is to be released, craving is to be abandoned. That abandoning, that complete abandoning of craving, is the freedom from suffering. So in the complete understanding and penetration of the right view, we end up in a space where we are naturally That my understanding is that we end up in a space where we're naturally engaging in our activities, our actions, in an effortless way, and they are skillful. That there's no longer an effort needed to try to cultivate what is wholesome and abandon what is unwholesome. It simply happens naturally because the mind understands that clinging to things leads to it understands that clinging is suffering, and it just simply doesn't pick things up anymore. So in this way, the right view is both the beginning and the ending of the path. That the culmination of the path is this penetration into understanding the Four Noble Truths. So those are some thoughts on right view, and I thought I'd open it up for any comments or any questions or discussion of any kind. So no questions? We can sit for a while. We can sit for the last few minutes then. So as you settle in to your meditation, settling into your body, coming into attending to the experience of breathing, seeing if you can recognize in your present moment experience which of these four aspects of the Four Noble Truths are operating. If you're feeling calm and stable, just attending to the experience of breathing, allow yourself to recognize and take in the cultivation of the path, the wholesome qualities of concentration, mindfulness, energy. If you're finding some kind of feeling of dissatisfaction appearing, if you're feeling something's off, something's not right, can you simply recognize that as the First Noble Truth? This is dukkha for myself from time to time. This is a very skillful way to bring in some balance of mind around a difficult situation. It reminds me that I'm on the path. I'm meeting experience and understanding it in this framework. Understanding suffering. Or if you're in contact with a feeling of wanting things to be other, recognizing that wanting is the Second Noble Truth. This is the cause of suffering. The Buddha instructed us to let go of the cause of suffering But often we can't simply let go through an act of will. But we can let it be. Watch it with mindfulness. Watch the wanting with mindfulness. It will eventually let go. If you see that letting go, you might notice a brief moment of balance. Of a close approximation to non-suffering, sense of things are as they are, and that's okay. A taste of the Third Noble Truth. Staying connected with your direct experience. Not trying too hard to overlay this as a conceptual framework on the meditation. But perhaps from time to time, as you are with your direct experience, recognizing one of these four aspects.